Hey, and welcome to
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, and welcome to the Breakthrough. This is a podcast radio show dedicated to helping you break through to your audience on whatever digital marketing channel that might be. Mobile, desktop, display, email, text message, phone call, just about anything that we can think of to try to engage your audience, we're going to talk about on this radio show. This is your host, Brendan Lemon. Of course, we've got Jason Argus, our co-host here.
How you doing, Brendan?
I'm doing pretty good, Jason.
Yeah, I'm very excited, actually, to join you and would love to, you know, bring up a couple topics. But before we do, you know, I thought it might be a good idea to maybe give us a little bit of a background. And
yeah, you came prepared for this.
I did. I wanted to, you know, cover a couple things I thought was kind of relevant in today's field when it comes to marketing and advertising. You know, so just kind of maybe jump in a little bit about what I'd like to cover, and I'll kind of give you a background of where I'm from.
Yeah, well, let's talk about a little bit about who we are. This is our first episode, of course, so nobody is probably listening to this. But I'm Brendan. I come from a background of digital mobile marketing and commerce, and have been in sales for a number of years. And we work at a mobile marketing company here in Chicago. So this is kind of my day-to-day bread and butter.
Yeah, you know, very similarly, I've also come from a background in business development and sales, from a few things that, you know, where it comes to B2B as well as B2C. I've done some corporate development for, you know, different organizations in the span of my career. Have seen a lot of what others have done in the industry, and so I'd love to, you know, just share my insight on that.
Yeah, well, let's jump in. You have a list of topics here, Jason, that I thought it was pretty cool that you put together. And we were just sort of talking about them before the show went live here, and I wanted to bring it up. So what was the first one that was on your agenda?
Yeah, the one that I thought is very relevant, especially in today's world, is bad-mouthing the competition, I think, has become more relevant in a lot of what a lot of brands are doing, I think, in trying to get, you know, more market share, you know, from their competition. And, you know, I think it's kind of a double-edged sword to know if this is the best way to do that. So, you know, I'd be interested to, you know, what you think about it.
Well, yeah, it's kind of interesting because the example you used before was the Chick-fil-A example, and if everybody remembers this, some years ago, what was the executive? He was like the CEO or someone who was high up in the Chick-fil-A organization ended up wanting to, or he said that the company outright did not support gay marriage, which I think was the message, right?
Well, I think it was his personal belief, and he, I think, you know, basically had come out. They're a very religious organization. For those who are familiar with Chick-fil-A brand, they're typically a little bit newer in our region. They've only been around for a few years, but they've been around.
We are coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois.
Yes, thank you for clarifying. But those who've been in the South have been very familiar with this brand for many years. But they have very traditional backgrounds. For example, they're closed on Sundays. You know, very short.
Are they really closed on Sundays? They're a fast food joint that does not operate on Sundays.
At least they were. At least that's, you know, what I was explained.
Wow.
When they first came to the Chicagoland area. And from what I understand, they're, you know, very Christian rooted, and the CEO, I believe, had made some remarks, personal beliefs, that he doesn't believe in gay marriage, and so this got him in a lot of hot water, and I think he tried to backtrack those statements by, you know, saying things that didn't reflect his view in doing business, and that they didn't discriminate. And so despite all of that, there was, you know, large reaction from, I think, the communities around to have things like sit-ins at these locations in support of gay rights, which obviously I think is...
Well, and then, of course, you know, the thing that I think came out in the media also was that there was a huge groundswell in the opposite direction of people who supported him, either because they support free speech or because they also are against, you know, gay marriage or something. But there was I remember in the media there were lines of photos of lines of people stretching around the block outside of Chick-fil-A locations all over America, and it was a pretty big, I remember it was a pretty big thing, and I think it's kind of interesting because for the marketer, I think that what's fascinating about this is that Chick-fil-A looks like, I mean, from a, I don't even consume fast food. I don't know anybody who really does, but from an outside perspective, they look a lot like just about everybody else in their space. And I think, I don't know if there's anything, there's a huge takeaway in terms of digital marketing, but in terms of PR and the confluence of where PR and marketing sort of overlap, that was a huge differentiator for that company. I mean, there was suddenly eating at Chick-fil-A became a political statement to a, you know, to an entire group of people. And it's not really bad-mouthing the competition, so to speak, but it was fascinating that just having a political message in the marketplace ended up with such a strong brand identity that people connected with.
Well, sure, and I think you're kind of moving into a spot where we were talking before the show, as you mentioned, about some of the topics I wanted to cover, and getting political was one of them. And I think that, you know, the specific topic of the Chick-fil-A was more about getting political than bad-mouthing. You know, when it came to the whole bad-mouthing thing, you know, there was a really interesting article that I read from the Wall Street Journal a few years back called The Art of Bad-Mouthing the Competition. And really, I think, is very interesting. But I've seen a lot happen recently, even in the Super Bowl ads we saw this year. I think it was Steve Harvey was representing one of the major carriers that was addressing, I think it was Verizon's ball example, where they had balls fall and show, you know, how they were best of breed in certain areas and how the other carriers fell short, and how he basically disrupted this. And so, you know, from the consumer's standpoint, is this something that's going to gain my attention? Is this something that's going to win me over, you know, over the competition and ultimately take market share away from those who I'm trying to compete head-to-head with? And, I think those questions remain unanswered. But then again, you know, sometimes I feel turned off personally when I see other organizations, other brands bad-mouthing their competitors. But when it comes to other brands, like, for example, some of the large cable companies that are out there, like Comcast, you know, I can't help but root for the underdog in these situations, you know, just because given how poor of experiences I've had with, you know, Comcast or AT&T.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's so funny to think about, because I think they're the number one, they were voted most hated company in America or something like that last year.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, if you go to Amazon started to list their services just on the website as a way for people to get in touch with Comcast representatives. And, of course, Amazon has a star rating system, and it made the round of media news in the sense that a lot of people were leaving some of the most hilarious comments about their one-star experience with Comcast. And so, you know, you kind of think from their perspective, is this, you know, were they shooting themselves in the foot by putting themselves on a website like Amazon?
God, I hope so. Just the hate, my schadenfreude for everything that brand does wrong just feels amazing. It just feels so good to whenever I hear bad news about Comcast, where they're you know, in trouble or they're causing their own problems. It just makes me well up with these good feelings inside, which is just awful. But I don't know. That's a good thing to think about, though, because if you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to connect with an audience, you're trying to connect with even an individual or a group of individuals or whatever the marketplace, whatever the people in the marketplace are, whoever they are. It's good to remember that it could very well be that your message is a breath of fresh air to people who are otherwise really frustrated at whatever circumstance that they're in, and attacking, you know, maybe not necessarily attacking, but gesturing toward the feelings that they have at the competitor. It could very well be a good way to get those feelings to resonate. I mean, you have to, at that point, a connection could be truth, you know, that or some kind of emotional truth that your customers are feeling, you know, that you can tap into. You know, I mean, if there was a, like, think about this. Google Fiber is, you know, rolling out to a number of different communities, and they're doing a very good job of not really having to say, I mean, Google doesn't have to say anything about fiber. Everybody who uses it is singing its praises everywhere, all over social media, and then, you know, on Reddit, I see
this they actually offer free internet. Google Fiber is actually offering free internet. Obviously, you're not getting the speeds of a paid service. Actually, I read yesterday that they're actually ceasing that, but they're replacing it with very inexpensive internet, still delivered over fiber optic cable. And you know, I think it's being disruptive in the sense, you know, moving away from the norm of what other cable companies are doing. But, you know, just to kind of shorten up what I kind of learned from a little bit of research of what I've done about, you know, bad-mouthing your competition, it really just depends on what you're trying to do. So if you are a company that's B2C, you sell direct to customers, I think, you know, you can get away with a little bit more. But when it comes to B2B, I think that you have to be very careful on what you say about your competition or what others ask about your competition and what your insight is, because I think it's better just to state, you know, what you do well in your space, I think, compared to what your competition does. There was an example specifically in the Wall Street Journal where they basically said, you know, if you're very interested into knowing what my competition was, you probably should ask them. And I think that really speaks some volume. You know, I can tell you from, you know, my perspective, what we are able to do, I think, is A, B, and C. And typically, you'll find that you might not get that in other locations.
I think it's, you know, I think that it's more conversational when you're talking about a B2B relationship where you're you know, if it comes to the point where you're talking about competition or talking to someone about competition, I think it makes sense to be honest about it and say very clearly, you know, when you go talk to some people, they're probably going to tell you things like this, maybe here's something to be aware of, but, you know, I can be honest and their product is going to be, their service is going to function in such and such a way. And, you know, I think probably positioning yourself to try to be anti another competitor is not a good place to be, because it doesn't really, you're not really selling the position in your prospect's mind at that point. You're really just, mm-hmm. you're really just looking anti the other guy. But what's interesting is that there's a way to do both at the same time, I think. And Papa John's is a good example of that, where Papa John's had a court case because they said better ingredients, better pizza. And that was their whole, and it still
I
is.
I think it still
there,
is.
Still
right?
is. Yeah, but John Schnatter, or whatever his the CEO and founder of that company, whatever.
The guy who's in the commercials?
Yeah, that's the guy.
Eli Manning's guy?
That guy's a billionaire. Yeah. And he was wasted at the last Super Bowl.
I'm sorry, Peyton Manning, not Eli Manning.
Yeah, I knew who you meant.
Yeah.
But I, you know. Anyway.
I saw that picture of him. Yeah.
That dude was wasted.
He was pretty drunk.
He was out of it. But anyway, I guess you get to do that when you're a billionaire. But the better ingredients, better pizza immediately made everyone who saw that commercial recognize the fact that indeed the pizza that they were getting from Domino's or Pizza Hut was awful. And Domino's, which has gone through a humongous rebranding effort.
They're not even pizza anymore. They're considered, like, you know, they're more than pizza is basically what their new
mantra
is.
Yeah, and
yeah.
They keep trying to – what's fascinating about it is they keep trying to – you know, when that Domino's pizza commercial came out, I remember thinking, this is stupid, this will never work. And it actually did, so they proved me wrong, but that was part of it, is that they had to shift the idea that you're not just ordering pizza. We have all kinds of – we have great salads. We've got – you know, I think they do, what, pasta and wings and other things like
yeah.
that now. And anyway, the point is that the one guy who hasn't changed their brand is Pizza Hut, and they're now
suffering.
Yeah, suffering market share. I don't know if I haven't been to a Pizza Hut location in...
I haven't had Pizza Hut pizza in years. I know that they've branded with Wing Street, which I have seen.
Yeah.
I couldn't speak to what success they've had in that, in the sense that I haven't seen or eaten their food in a long time, probably speaks volume, but I have had Domino's pizza, which, to tell you the truth, I was skeptical about it a few years ago before they went through that rebranding process to say, Domino's pizza, like, really? But it's actually,
I still haven't had it.
It's good. It's comparatively to what it was is good. I mean, it's obviously not we're from Chicago, so I think we're a little bit, you know, stick our nose up in the air when it comes to quality of pizza. But that being said, you know, I think the improvement level that they've made and rebranding has probably paid off pretty well. But at the same time, you know, they've kind of shotgunned their marketing efforts so much so that, like, I don't even know where to begin when I want to order a pizza from them. They've had commercials with celebrities where all you have to do is text the word pizza, things like that. Not very familiar territory for somebody like myself, but I'd be interested to kind of know, you know, more or less what type of success they've seen and maybe kind of gain some more visibility as far as what their results are seeing with their mobile and marketing efforts in general.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I saw it, I think, on TV, the rebranding on a commercial, and I don't hardly watch TV anymore, but that blends into something else I know that you wanted to talk about, which is mobile ads. That is, what is the...
Short and sweet. Versus,
short and sweet, yeah.
So, yeah, basically, there was a really interesting article that was produced recently by Stream Daily. It basically kind of did a comparison about mobile ads in general and age groups that find what ads to be more appealing, brand appealing, whether they would buy buy the product from these ads. And so basically, you know, the overview of that was basically that ages between 18 and 34, your millennials, your that age group found it to be more appealing to have shorter ads in the range of about 10 seconds long. The brand seemed to be more appealing, but they found quite the opposite true with age groups of 35 and plus, that those groups actually, you know, they felt that there was more appeal to the brand if it was about 30 seconds. So, you know, from my personal experience when it comes to ads on mobile devices with my smartphone, if anything is longer than 10 seconds, like,
yeah,
I'm hitting
no
the home
idea,
button.
Yeah. And it's so strange because we're right in that age group.
Right.
Like, I wonder why the 35, I wonder why the difference is. But a 30, I mean, that's a 20-second difference, which is essentially a 300% increase versus, or 200% increase. I don't know how to quite do the math on that, but
to quote a famous
YouTube
video, ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah, it's three times as long.
I like what YouTube does when it comes to advertising. I think they, with their videos that they put in between in the beginning of whatever video you're about to watch, not always, but sometimes they have that skip button.
Yeah.
But the commercial knows that they have, you know, 10 seconds to basically say, this is who we are, this is what we're saying.
Yeah.
And then if you continue to watch the remaining, whatever, 30 seconds, 40 seconds, you'll have more in-depth, I think. And for me, I think that's more of a, you know, better experience. It's a better experience, I think, for me, just because I can say, oh, this is something that interests me, or, let's just get on. This doesn't apply to me.
Well, it's kind of so what's the takeaway, I think, from this is that, you know, those YouTube spots, that advertising is not terribly expensive. I mean, I've seen YouTube television or, you know, YouTube shows that have been advertised on other YouTube shows with exactly this kind of approach where they get 10 seconds to hook you in. So what's interesting is there's kind of – this is becoming a really egalitarian way for people to advertise in general. And I've seen the Domino's ads on these, which go longer than 10 seconds, and I skip.
Have you seen the Geico ads?
That's – I was just about to mention that.
The Geico ads that they have on YouTube are really funny because I think that they speak directly to – the experience that you're viewing the ad on. So for those who haven't seen it, it's really funny. They have like the two guys, I think one's vacuuming or something of that nature, and basically they all pretend, the actors pretend like they're frozen, like you might get buffering issues on your video stream. So they kind of play and they kind of poke at that, and which is fun. At the end of the day, I'm not convinced to buy Geico, but you know, at the same time, I'm sitting here talking about it now. So is that ad effective?
They can hook you in, you know, they hook you into watching it longer than 10 seconds and to watching the entire span of the ad, and then it's entirely shareable. And if for anyone listening who which is probably none of you, but for anyone listening, this is really fast, #episode1. This is really fascinating. You should absolutely go Google these ads because they're worth checking out, and it's another example of how really good creative. And you know, if it didn't have to be, if it wasn't Geico, it could have been anybody.
Right.
Anybody could have done this.
Yeah.
That there's an opportunity for whatever, you know, whatever your product or service is that you're marketing to leverage that space as creatively as possible and get tons of brand exposure. Because, you know, I can guarantee you that people are logging on to just watch those commercials.
Yep.
And talk about them with one another.
And I think to circle back to when it comes to bad-mouthing brands, I think it, in the right way it can be effective, and with the right brands it also can be effective. Obviously, Comcast is one that always comes to mind. There's a specific story where I was home and I got somebody who knocked on my door, two representatives from AT&T, who basically asked me about who my provider was, which I explained it was Comcast, and they basically just kept tearing them a new one, saying, you know, how's your experience? What's the customer service been like? And of course, You know, I was telling them some of these horror stories, which they said, you know, this is something we hear all the time. Did you know that Comcast, you know, this or that? And, you know, I think they were kind of, you know, poking at that particular area and bad-mouthing them. But it worked for them in their favor because even though I didn't sign up with AT&T, so I guess it didn't work out 100%, I used it as leverage to get my Comcast bill lowered. And so, but, you know, I look at both AT&T and Comcast in almost in the same realm, that they're these two large giants who have a lot of control. You know, basically those are my only two ISP providers.
Yeah, the only two kind of across the board, really. It's sad. We're, like, stuck in a...
Depends on where you live, but, yeah, I mean, for the most part, most regions only have, I think, one or two options, and so it really leaves... the consumer in a really bad position. So I think in those instances, you know, sometimes bad mouthing competition can work in your favor and to pick off where they left off. And
Think this points to sort of the trend that we're exploring in this episode is good customer experience. And I think that no matter what you're doing, whether it's over, you know, digital, whether it's on a YouTube, whether it's on a television commercial, whether it's, you know, your brand presence. I mean, people forget that your service and the things that you actually do with your customers is marketing. I mean, that's part of what's happening. I mean, the reason that people stay with you in a way is a kind of marketing. And if you're being really bad,
right,
you're in a way doing marketing for other companies. And so I think good customer experience, you know, when you look at the YouTube videos and things that are shareable, is a good way. I mean, Zappos, this is another good example. Zappos? Yeah, the shoe company basically became the online shoe retailer. Have you ever seen a single commercial for them?
I can't think of.
Yeah, no one's ever seen, as far as I know, they've never had a single commercial. I've never seen a single one online. They don't sponsor podcasts. They don't, which is, you know, by the way, if you're listening, Zappos, we would love you to sponsor us. We can talk all day about you. Anyway, but their good customer service got written about in a blog years ago where I forget exactly, and you can Google this story, but some woman was having some challenges, a blogger, and needed some shoes sent in a very odd kind of way. And I think it could have been her mother had passed away and she had to go to some other location. And the Zappos customer service rep found this out over email with the woman and made sure that whatever happened with her shipment was sensitive to whatever circumstances were taking place in this woman's life. And what was fascinating about it is that she wrote about that very positively, and that blew up, and Zappos got to be known as this great customer service company, which in the online environment wasn't really happening very much. This was still semi-early in people ordering things online. And there wasn't exactly a model with how should you interact with your customers. And Zappos just said, hey, look, our customers are always right, and we're going to do whatever we have to do for them. To the point where you can write some really crazy, ridiculous things in your requests when you order, and they'll fulfill it.
Yeah, I think your point to great customer service is really where I think a lot of brands do well. And I think that feeds through in marketing. And you see brands who obviously try to reach their customers either in store or online or on TV, I think the ones who do a really good job, are able to connect with their customers on a more emotional level as well. And so I think, you know, brands like Geico, for example, you know, they tend to hit the funny bone pretty well. You know, does that translate to dollars and cents and, you know, people converting over to, you know, them as an insurance provider? I don't know. You know, I don't have visibility into that type of information, but I think they're on the right track. So I think when it comes to certain brands, I think speaking to them on an emotional level is definitely a good way to get their attention. And then it's up to you about what you can offer that your competition doesn't as a way to get them to purchase. So, you know, that's just a little bit of, you know, where I feel as though that some brands have been very successful.
You know, it's interesting because getting back to bad mouthing, and like we had talked about, something that is worth, I think, also remembering is because of, like, exactly what happened with Zappos. Like, in the world of online social media and digital media and the way that people get to connect with one another, you know, Seth Godin is right when he says that the era of one-directional messaging is essentially over, that brands have to listen to their customers. They don't get to dictate the message exactly anymore. And part of that is that if you're saying things about a that are incorrect or not accurate, not real about your competition, you're just going to get annihilated in social media. I mean, people are going to talk about that so fast and so quickly. You know, I've tried to launch two companies online, and the messaging...
Or getting political, for that
matter. Or getting political. I mean, you're right about that, too. And in Chick-fil-A's example, that can...
Hobby Lobby.
That functions. Yeah, Hobby Lobby is another one.
Birth control, that whole instance.
Those all function positively for those brands in the sense that they got a lot of exposure, and the people who are already on the inside of that circle, which were people who probably ended up going to those places anyway, got more charged and felt like they were members of the tribe. But, you know, I've tried to launch two companies online, and each time I've done that, I've tried to position the company in a semi-political or totally political way. One of them was a company called Thrive Bomber, which had T-shirts that had anti-conservative sort of environmental messages, and I just got annihilated on social media about it.
Like climate change denialists?
Yeah, it was attacking climate change denialists, and like one of them said frack the Koch brothers and like things like this. And, you know, if you were not already on the inside of that, the thing I learned is that liberals, real liberals, don't like the idea of trying to be sold anything. You know, I wasn't going after a group of people who had deep pockets. But lesson learned. Anyway, the point is that those people will destroy you on social media because the truth is whatever it is for them, you know, that you have to make a concerted argument or you're tapping into something that they already believe in order to have your message resonate. Otherwise, they're going to argue with you and you're just going to reinforce their position. And they're going to be happy to feel their righteous sense of indignation with all their buddies on Facebook.
Sure. And I think, you know, a lot of brands have a lot of trouble, I think, you know, sometimes staying out of the political limelight, you know, or somebody, you know, at a high level is asked what their personal beliefs are and in some aspect. And I think that can really backfire on those people. So, you know, Hobby Lobby obviously is a very religious organization who have, I think were famously stated to say that some corporations should have the same rights as people.
Well, which we know Mitt Romney agrees with.
Yes, I mean that was very politicized, I think, during the last presidential campaign. I think it kind of works both ways. I mean, maybe Hobby Lobby is seeing greater support from those who agree with those political stances, and probably are, you know, suffering in the demographic with those who, you know, feel the opposite. So I think it works both ways. But, you know, at the end of the day, they are who they are, and I don't think they're going to change, you know, any of what their role is when it comes to, you know, how they can offer their employees health care. But I think, you know, for those especially who are wanting to be successful and to keep their demographic as open as possible, you really have to be careful in what you say, and I think, especially the way you market yourself. Well,
I don't know. We could open that discussion up for our next episode. We're coming up on our time here in a second, but I think that in a way, it's almost better to be divisive. That, you know, casting a broad net versus going for a niche and trying to hook people into opting in is maybe another conversation that we can have next time, particularly around, I think we might want to talk about marketing funnels or generating marketing funnels and channels. Places like Digital Marketer are all about that. But again, I mean, this show particularly is with an eye towards the executive who exists, you know, the marketer who exists within a brand that they're trying to, you know, hit their KPIs, and they're not necessarily the one man army who's running an online produced a PDF on script and is selling their own self produced book necessarily. Although we love you guys too. Good, you know, fight the good fight.
Yeah. And to the end, I think one topic I think I'd like to maybe cover in our next episode, Brendan, would probably be just talking about the subtlety versus overt style of marketing that I think a lot of brands do. Have you ever watched a commercial and thought to yourself, I understand the commercial, but I have no idea what they're selling me or who
Sprint.
This company is.
Sprint does that all
Remember
the time.
Remember the old GoDaddy commercials?
Yeah, with Danica Patrick.
They were very racy commercials, and I'm like, who is GoDaddy and what the hell do they do?
Yeah, I don't understand. Like selling selling you on the idea that you can also become some kind of internet hotshot. Anyway, that's all the time that we have today. We're gonna have to schedule all those discussions and racy Danica Patrick talk for next time. But we appreciate everybody listening to this. And thank you, Jason.
Yep. Thanks, Brendan.
Take it easy.